Lord, bless the words of my mouth and the meditation of our hearts, for you are our rock and our Redeemer. Amen.
Amen.
Because I was a college chaplain at Princeton and Boston University for 14 years before I returned to parish ministry, I've learned to pay careful attention to what 20-somethings say, not only with their voices, but also with their tattoos. I've learned that students in their 20s who have tattoos usually have them for profound and soulful reasons. They are not just body art. Whether or not they're willing to tell us, tattoos often hold a place of sacred meaning for the young adults who wear them. So I've learned to be patient, to listen, and to ask respectful questions about the signs and symbols those students care enough to have carved into their flesh. I was glad for all my college chaplaincy training when I met a woman in her late 20s at my Brookline Health Club. We're friends because we see each other across the treadmills, and we chat briefly over fluffy yellow towels, which we're each busy picking up as we make our way to the lockers. I waited until I'd known her for about 6 months before I asked her about a tattoo of a large clock face. The clock face, the size of a coaster, has beautiful etched numbers and holds a prominent place just beneath her collarbone and just above her heart. During an easy part of a conversation one day, I said, "That's a beautiful tattoo. I wonder why the hands point to the 12 and the 14. And she said, "Well, thank you. No one's asked me that question before. It's because of Romans 12:14. And then when I looked at her blankly, because I'm an Episcopalian and I can't quote chapter and verse from the Bible, she said, "You know, Romans 12:14. Bless those who persecute you. Bless them and do not curse them." She knew I was an Episcopal priest, so I asked her if she was also a believer, and she said yes, she was a believer. She said she didn't belong to a church at the moment, but that Romans was very important to her. And I told her she would always be welcome at our church if she ever decided she wanted to try on a congregation again. We went our separate ways, and I marveled over her tattoo for the rest of the afternoon. What would it take for you to embrace the challenge of forgiveness so deeply that you were willing to carve its requirements onto your chest? Bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse them. I was absolutely stunned by her faith, by her readiness to remind herself daily of the power and the challenge of that biblical mandate, by marking herself in that unforgettable way. I wear a collar almost every day, but I get to take mine on and off at night. This young woman will be wearing Paul's words day in and day out, and she will wear them into her grave decades from now. Paul's words are hard words, but they are also words of life. Whatever pain or tragedy or sorrow of ours that needs forgiving will fester in our lives until we find a way to move past that death-dealing sorrow and find light and life again. As Christians, we know that it's both death and resurrection together that create a saving moment. It's not just obsessive remembering alone, that unending recollection of painful past details that will free a person into new life. It's telling the truth about the dying and then making room for a divine transformation that we call resurrection that will bring new life about. Remembering has its place, but until we do the hard work of transformation and make room for the divine to change us, healing will probably elude us. We've been given a thorny gospel this morning. It's a gospel that struggles over the question of forgiveness and judgment and our ability to claim a new life. One master forgives a slave 10,000 talents worth of debt. But then that newly freed slave has a cold heart towards another slave who owes the first slave 100 denarii. The first slave imprisons the slave who owes him 100 denarii, apparently learning nothing from the generosity and kindness lavished on him by his master. So because the circumstances were changed, but his heart was not, the first slave is punished severely. There is no forgiveness for people who will not forgive. There is no kindness for people who refuse to be kind. There seems to be no compassion for people who deny compassion to others. This is the same gospel logic embedded in Our Father prayer, which Jesus himself taught us. Forgive us our trespasses as we forgive others who trespass against us. If we do not forgive, we will not be forgiven. And it's also the same gospel logic that Paul confronts us with in Romans. If we can only curse the ones who curse us, there is only room for cursing. If we can't find a way to move towards forgiveness with God's help, there will be no room for new starts, new beginnings, new life. In our gospel, Jesus tells us that we are to try to forgive not 7 times, but 77 times. And in the Bible, the number 7 is the number for completeness and perfection, which is why creation takes 7 days in Genesis and why we still have 7 days in our modern week. But when Jesus talks about forgiveness, Jesus asks us to go into exponential perfection and exponential completeness. He multiplies 7 by 11 and tells us to forgive 77 times. He requires a seemingly infinite number of opportunities for us to bless and not curse the people who have hurt us. He sets that bar very high, which I suppose means he has a lot of faith in us to rise to the occasion. Jesus is the master of forgiveness, but I am still in training. And I hope you are too. I'm not as far along in the journey as my 20-something friend, whose tattoo gives her daily practice. But I've begun. I'm on the way. And we can each begin. We can each try on forgiveness towards the people who hurt us. We can encourage our love to be larger than our fears. Transformation and healing are waiting for us on the other side. We can carve these words into our hearts. Bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse them. Amen.